Hello, everybody. Today we've got a special guest in the studio with us over Skype, and that is Alison Oborne from Adelaide's Haunted Horizons.
G'day. How are you all?
Good.
Excellent. How are you?
I like Paul's really rude not offering a hello there.
You're way quiet,
So now, Alison, you've been in the field for quite a while. So first of all, tell us a little bit about how you got an interest with the paranormal and, you know, give us a bit of a rundown what you have been doing in that time that you've been researching.
Well, my interest in the paranormal goes right back to childhood because I was born into a haunted house. And rather than believe it was haunted and by a ghost, I just wanted answers, whether it was natural, supernatural. It didn't really worry me. It was just I wanted answers for that. Now, it wasn't until I came to Australia in 1989 that I took up actual research and sort of joined a few other teams, did the UFO field for a while, but got back into that first love of ghosts and life after death. Set up our own team in 2002, which is Paranormal Field Investigators, and been busy with that ever since. So we were quite lucky. We got the Adelaide Jail for 10 years, and that just brought up more questions than answers, I think, along the way.
You mentioned that you grew up in a haunted house. What kind of things were happening there?
It happened more to my sisters and my brother. My sister was seeing what she was describing as disembodied eyes in the corner of a room, and they would move around. Things would be moved frequently. My mother actually saw a figure of a man, woke up to find a figure of a man standing at her bed. Now, he did have a lot of detail to him, and she said his eyes were protruding, a bit like, I don't know if you remember Marty Feldman.
Marty Feldman.
Going back, oh, you're probably too young. Look up a photo of Marty Feldman. But protruding eyes. Now, it wasn't until the neighbour showed her a photo of the old owner of the house that they realised that the protruding eyes, it's a disease you can get, kind of a thyroid disease, I believe, and it makes the eyes protrude, and that's what the old owner had, who was killed. He was murdered, that owned the house before us.
Murdered in the house?
No, he had actually gone to a pub one New Year's Eve, and he'd been mugged on the way home. They found him with head injuries. So he was taken to hospital, and he died a short time after that. But here's a little claim to fame for you, all right?
All right.
For anybody who's watched the Blackadder series, and watched especially Series 2,
yes,
where the Blackadder goes to see the wise woman because he's fallen in love with his manservant, Bob. Don't know if you remember that. Well, the wise woman's father is the one that haunted that house. Yeah, so there you go, a bit of claim to fame. Famous person from beginning.
We're going to have to go get some video stills of that, and everyone can have a look at Alison's ghost.
That ghost can be writing autographs.
And we know what protruding eyes look like.
Yes, that's right. Eye popping ghost. So you lived in a haunted house, and you mentioned you come over here, you did a bit of UFO research, and you got into the ghost research, and you were lucky enough to secure the Adelaide Jail for quite a time. Now, that's a pretty major score for a new team, back then. How did that come about, and in your time as the Adelaide Jail, did anything major happen?
Well, we were just, I think, right place, right time. All these rumours had come out of the jail that a ghost of a guard was being seen on a regular basis, and this was during the daytime on history tours. So we approached the manager. I mean, we're going back 2002, which was 10 years ago, and we kind of approached the manager, asked if we could try and verify this, and I think they wanted to know as well, once and for all, did they have something there? So she was very open to it. I think, as I said, it was just luck. It was just the right place, right time, and we got in. We only went in for about 6 months. That's what we were going to do. We thought 6 months, do something, then we can move on to another historical site maybe. We ended up staying 10 years, and probably nobody knows, is I did write a book called Ghosts of the Past, which kind of told of that 10 years we had in there, because we did have a lot happen. That's why we ended up staying for so long. So,
well, I've read at least half of that book.
How long have you had it?
Oh, quite a while. I got a signature version. No, I've read the whole book. That's a little joke myself and Alison had, was I'd only read half the book for quite a while there, and I'd start reading some other things, and I'd get quite a bit of a ribbing from you.
You would.
But since the Adelaide jail, you've, and while you're with Adelaide jail, you've started a business, I believe, and that is Adelaide Haunted Horizons. How did that come about? That's a pretty big jump from investigator to, you know, taking people through these places and doing a lot of your own research on them.
It is, but in 2004, we actually signed up as a volunteer, and the manager approached us and asked us if we would help with their ghost tours. They already had a ghost tour. PFI kind of developed those ghost tours a little over the years with the material we were getting, and we tour guided for all that time. And it did become a bit of a love. You do get very, very passionate about sharing your own passion, if you like, with so many different people, and they can't go anywhere because they're a captive audience. So it kind of becomes a real enjoyment. People kept asking, is there any other tours? They really enjoyed that one. Do we do tours anywhere else? It soon became very apparent that people wanted more, and I was enjoying it so much. And at the end of the day, what job can you say you really love that you put two passions together with your interests? So, no, it's been really, really enjoyable. It was a natural step for me and haven't looked back. So
I've been on most of your ghost tours and, including the investigation afterwards. There's quite a few locations that you go on. Do you want to go through some of them for us?
Yeah, look, we did do the Adelaide jail for a little while, but we kind of moved on from there. And we do Tailham Town Pioneer Village up at Tailham Bend. That has, as a researcher, because I do keep things on a rational level, as a researcher, that place has intrigued me more than anywhere. The other places we do is St. Cecilia's. They're over at Peterborough. There's a big mansion there, and we do specials there every couple of months. That's an all-night one. People come for the whole night. And we've just been given permission to start up in Burra, so we've just been doing dry runs up there. So we get to use Redruth Jail, the dugouts, the lockups, and hopefully soon the courthouse.
That's great. Yeah. That's the one I haven't been on. I'm very much looking forward to that one.
We're waiting for the weather to warm up a little bit. We were going to kick them off in the next few weeks, but having been up at Peterborough, and it was so painfully cold that we decided we'd kick the Burra ones off maybe in September when it gets a bit warmer.
You've done a dry run or two of Burra. How are they going? What places are people expecting to see on their time up at Burra with you guys?
Oh, they went, well, the last one went really well because we changed it from the first one. We're still evolving them, see what people want. And we actually got the Bonacord Cottage, mine cottage there, so we rented that for the night to keep the guests in, which is supposedly haunted as well. They just had a great time. We did Redruth Jail and, as I say, the dugouts. We went through all the different sites, rotated the people around as the teams. And, yep, they had a lot of fun. And then we all sat around with a cooked breakfast in the morning, so which we all sort of cooked ourselves, and Anna, my backup, did the cooking.
Oh, excellent.
The eggs were interesting.
What do you mean they were interesting?
Anna, if she's listening.
I thought she'd be a great cook, that Italian blood flowing through. I thought she'd be a fantastic chef.
Well, with pasta, probably, but eggs, they were very nice. They're just an interesting shape, that's all. And she'd laugh at this. I think we put photographs up on the Facebook page of her eggs.
All right. And you mentioned Tailham Town has intrigued you as an investigator. How so? Like, we do know, and anyone that's followed PFI over the years will see that you do keep things on a rational level. You don't have a lot of evidence up on the website because you do debunk a lot of your own things. So how has Tailham Town intrigued you?
Well, I can honestly say in the, 1989, 23 years doing my sums, in all that old age that I'm coming to, is I can honestly say I haven't ever seen anything full on like an entity in front of me. And that's in the 10 years at the jail as well. And yes. Which is well known for being haunted. That's how rare it is to me to see anything. At Tailham Town now, I've seen something full on twice, and whatever it was, I don't know, but it was definitely, I thought it was Well, I'll say it because, I mean, Ash obviously used to work for me.
Yes.
I thought it was Ash because you're tall. You're very tall, very lean, about 6 foot odd. And this is the exact size this person was that I saw coming into the church. Now, I wasn't worried because I thought it was you. And, of course, I'm shouting out to you saying, yeah, you know. It's just you, isn't it, Ash? And you're not answering me. And when we shone the torches on the back, there was nothing there. Now, two of us saw it come in, and all of us heard it come in. So that kind of blew me away a little bit and started changing my thinking on, or challenging my thinking. I won't say it changes my thinking. It challenges it a little more.
Yeah.
So still tend to keep, because the more I research, people say, oh, you must be starting to really, really believe in the paranormal. You've researched all this time. But I'd be saying, well, the more I researched, actually, the less I believed in it, if you like. I was finding so many natural explanations for stuff. So to have that thinking change back again or challenged again was quite refreshing for me. So, yeah, no, Tell 'em Town is my favourite place at the moment.
So it's brought back your, I suppose...
my enthusiasm for it,
yeah. That's right.
For the search and to get answers. It's like, well, you didn't know everything. Which I didn't anyway, but it's kind of that, you know, I was starting to get to that, not skeptical, well, everybody should be skeptical to a certain extent, but yeah, it just reawoken that need for answers
and
that I need.
With that event being quite a major event, it was quite famous on your Facebook page, people talking about it. Two of your local, well, not local, two of your really regular visitors from over Melbourne way. But
yeah.
but they did some reviews on this, but that kind of experience has now taken a back seat to a bigger event that took place on the Blood Moon.
Yeah, well, we've had, you know, 2 years. It doesn't happen regularly. I should just make this very clear that Tell 'em Town does not go off the planet every time you go in there.
Yeah.
I'm just lucky that I'm there for every single tour in 2 years. Well, it's coming up to 2 years soon. And in that 2 years, we've had 4 nights whereby I've stood at the front of that church trying to give the stories, just standing there going, what the is happening? Because it's just full on. One of them was what we've nicknamed the Red Moon or Blood Moon Night. And that was because, I can't remember where it was about 2 or 3 months ago, we had the eclipse of the moon, and the moon was going to turn blood red about 1 o'clock in the morning. Oh, it's just so much was happening that night. And people's moods were changing. People were going into rages. We found a book that was on a bookcase where we heard a bang. Pulled the book off, opened it at a random page. The first sentence on that random page was, when the moon turns blood red, yeah. Which was just like, I was laughing as usual, going, oh, look at this funny little joke.
Yeah,
it was just the weirdest night. In fact, it's the first time in, well, I've been doing tours for 8 years now. It's the first time in probably 8 years that I've had to say stop, and I pulled the tour because people were just ready to punch each other.
Oh,
it was,
wow.
The moods were changing that much and being that affected.
Sounds like one of our investigations.
Paul Spione missed that.
Yeah. No, where were we? We were at Ebenezer.
Yeah, an old schoolhouse out in Ebenezer. And I think the most we got was Debbie heard an old school bell ring,
yeah,
and then she choked on a moth. But you guys seem to have it all. You guys hogging the Blood Moon energy all to yourselves.
I think it was all down at our place.
Yeah, that's it. Now, a question that we've got for you is one that we covered in a podcast recently, and it was about, I think it was mid-2011 that this question popped up and went around for a bit and caused a bit of a stir, and that is that there was some controversy. Some people were stating that a belief that people that ran an investigation through a location should not be able to run tours there because I guess they would have a bias towards the paranormal with their own evidence, as well as, you know, trying to make some money off of the location itself with their own stories that people believe they could make up. Now, being a tour guide and a tour operator, as well as running tours through places you have investigated yourself, how do you respond to that kind of a claim or that kind of a thought process, a belief?
Yeah, no, it's a criticism, really. Look, I saw it going around, and I see it bandied around all the time. As soon as I see the fact that a paranormal group is possibly involved in a tour, as it becomes a real stigma. But my argument with that would be, well, if the team is an ethical team anyway, so they're kind of known for being ethical, for not over embellishing stuff, who better than to take a tour? They've had first-hand experience. It's like we were in the jail for 10 years. And we've got the passion. We've got the experiences to share. You don't have to make up evidence for a tour. All you're doing is relating. You're a storyteller on a tour. All you're doing is relating experiences. You're not trying to prove the paranormal to a tour. So if I'm paying my money, would I pay somebody else who would use the paranormal investigator's work and research, or would I pay the paranormal research team that did it themselves? Because I'm going to get first-hand experience. I'm going to get exactly what happened, how it felt. For that reason, I would say, well, no, I don't see it as a conflict. I mean, I'll put it straight, paranormal field investigators do not run these tours. It's very much my baby myself. Plus, if these teams have put the work, the effort into researching the stories and researching the history, they've put the time and the money into, because a business running tours isn't cheap. I would imagine Ash would know how much work I put into running these tours in the first place. And it took a year just to get the Gawler tour up and running. And that was because I'm permanently researching the history and whatnot. If somebody's put all that time, effort, money, and they give a good service, people are enjoying it, they're paying their taxes, if you like, they're bringing tourism to the buildings that need the money, then I say go for it. And that's probably, people are going to see that as biased, but it's kind of, no, I understand being on a leg in both camps, that there's a lot of work goes into it. As long as it's done properly and not just for a quick buck, then, yeah, no, look, I've got no problem with it. We employ people as well, so it brings a bit of employment to the state.
A lot of the stories and the ghost stories, I suppose, come from caretakers and previous occupants of the building as well, not just the paranormal team that's investigated.
Yeah.
So, I mean, most other tours I've been on as well, like interstate and that, they run exactly the same way. So
yeah.
I can't see any conflict there anyway.
Yeah. And eventually also most of the stories now take Tailem Town, for instance. Most of the stories that we use on Tailem Town now are actually stories that have been experienced on the tours. In fact, I think apart from the shadowy figure we saw in the hotel, we don't use any PFI stories. So I haven't got any evidence to give them from PFI to do with Tailem Town, because we didn't catch any EVPs there either. So it's experiences. It's what people have been experiencing. And that's what we are with storytellers, what was there before we came. So, no, I think if you're putting the hard yakka in and you really do mean to do it properly and you're keeping everything safe for the people who are coming, you're giving them a great time, you're getting good feedback, people are enjoying it, then, hey, you know, go for it.
Excellent. And Al, I'm going to chuck you on the spot right here.
Oh, I like
this. This is a good one. This is something you and Paul can talk about. Now, you do the investigation tours and, you know, people can either do the regular tour or they can pay a little bit of extra money and stay on for another 2, 3, sometimes 4 hours. I've seen it stretched.
It sometimes goes because you're
a nice tour guide.
My staff hate me.
Yeah, if it's a nice tour, you allow it to run along and, you know, if there's stuff happening. But one of the pieces of equipment that you use is a piece of equipment I believe you've criticised, and that's the ghost box. I'm going to let you and Paul ever talk about that. But why don't you? what's going on there? You said you're going to do research it for 6 months. Now you've had some interesting hits on it, and you're going to write a report. But that report's never been written. What's going on, Alison?
What is going on? Look, I slammed it, and I still do to a certain extent. It's if anybody ever goes to the Paranormal Field Investigator Forum, you will see that there's a lot by me written about it, about how we shouldn't be using it, it should be out of this field. I can't deny, and we were going to research it for 6 months. That was what I threw. You'll see it on my forum. Okay, what we'll do is we'll research it for 6 months. Research it, not use it in research. There's a big difference there. Mm-hmm. And write a report at the end of it. Now, when I put that up on my forum, I meant to totally debunk this thing. That's just what I was going to do. I made it look like I was being nice, but that's what I was going to do. No, I never wrote the report. I can't deny on certain occasions it's come out with things that are nigh on should have been impossible. I think I played a couple to Ash. One of them would be that Spilios one.
Mm-hmm. Spilios, I've heard that one too. That's yeah. pretty good.
It's the rarest Greek. Anybody who's Greek out there would probably verify this. The Spilios is the rarest Greek name that you can come across. Spilios, who's in our team, he only knows him and his grandfather, whoever had this name. And the chances of a radio station saying the word Spilios at the time that you're saying, can you say my name, can you say Spilios, and then Spilios comes out momentarily, seconds later, would be very rare. Now, I can't say that it's paranormal, because coincidences in the universe do happen, as we know. It's the way of the world. And it might have just been one of those. We've had a couple of other ones that have intrigued me, and that's the best way of putting it. It intrigues me. However, would I use it in research? No, just by the simple method of how it works. You cannot use that as evidence. I could never use the Spilios as evidence of being the paranormal. Do I use it on the tours? Yes, because tours are more entertainment, as far as I'm concerned. This isn't about teaching people, giving certificates or anything like that. It's about giving people a bit of fun for the night to sit in dark, creepy places. They've seen it on the TV shows with guidance, obviously, yeah. and trying to teach them the pitfalls of what is natural. But at the same time, letting them enjoy themselves. Now, they enjoy things that are flashy and things that are going to spit out words to them. So we keep it on that level that that could have been the radio. We're just waiting for things that are hard to explain more than anything. There, that was a good ramble, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, when you're doing your tour, you do need things that are live and instant.
These people don't want to join a team. They don't want to spend all that money on a whole load of equipment. There are a lot of people out there like this. We're catering for those people because all they want to do is they want to go in, maybe one-off, go in, see what it's like on the shows that they're watching and get a feel for it. And people by nature are very proactive. Now, you and me as a research team, we would sit for hours and hours just monitoring. Yes. And that's natural to us. But to a person who just comes in, seen it on a TV show, wants to have that little experience of just sitting in the dark and looking for ghosts, they want something more to happen. They're not going to sit for 2 hours just quietly.
No,
in silence. It's like that isn't what they pay the money for. So we get them things. We play with things that I wouldn't play with in research. And we do tell them that, you know, this wouldn't be accepted in research and it wouldn't be the way I would do research. But because I see this more as entertainment, I don't mind us playing with the gadgets. If you want to play with the gadgets, here they are. So this is how we sort of set the tours up, the investigation tours.
Excellent.
And why we play with silly things like the ghost box, and we even occasionally get the dowsing rods out.
That's right.
Another one I slammed on.
We're going to have to wrap this up very soon. So we usually try to keep them to about 20 minutes, but you've taken some extra time, Alison. So
have I?
Yes, you have. So to wrap up the show, we always ask three questions of all the people that we're interviewing. So Paul will ask you the first one.
Okay. Your favourite piece of equipment or your favourite equipment?
My favourite piece of equipment. I think that's always going to be the voice recorder. Ooh. EVPs are the ones that, especially when you know that it wasn't you, EVPs are the ones that intrigue me the most.
Okay, excellent.
What while you're talking about EVPs, what is the best EVP? You've been investigating for a long time. What is the best EVP that you've heard?
The one that will always be my favourite, and I guess I can say it now that they're out there, is from Glenside. And yep. A long time ago, we were let in there. I thought there was nothing happening till I got home. What we've got, and there was only me and Brett, my other team member, in this particular part of Glenside. When I got home listening back to the audio, we've got Brett saying, oh, we'll check on the cameras tomorrow and see what we've got. But halfway through him talking, a child kicks in. He shuts up, and the child continues talking. It's a whole sentence. Now, and it's a very clear sentence as well. We know it wasn't us. And, well, I know it wasn't me, put it this way, and he's already talking. So that one, you can hear it's not a sound artifact. It's just, yeah, that one's, to me, was just really good, yeah.
Well, what was it saying? You left that out. Everyone's like, yes, tell us.
I thought you heard that one.
Well, we have, but our listeners haven't.
I played it to a few people who worked there, and they recognised it straight away as a child saying, they took off my clothes. Now, apparently, 6 months later, I went on a history tour there, the last one of Glenside, and apparently that's what they used to do. They used to take the patients' clothes off them so they couldn't kill themselves with the clothing, and also used to take the bedding off them. So in winter, they would have just been freezing in those rooms.
And that'd be up on your website?
That one isn't, no.
No.
Yeah. Well, oh, I suppose
you have
I could
to
put
see
it up
about
now.
Doing
the
reason, that.
I mean, the reason I didn't put it up, obviously, because it was a more confidential one back then. It's not so important now because it was years ago. But yeah, I could put it up, I guess.
All right. Now the second question is what's the funniest thing that's ever had on tour on investigation for you?
Apart from having you as a staff member. Oh, I can think of many funny moments with...
Well, you only get to say one, so what's the funniest thing?
Oh, look, there's just so many. We just have such a lot of fun. And I think mainly the main fun's been amongst the staff themselves.
Yep.
It's kind of those moments when you're waiting for the tourists to turn up. So any one incident, they just have to go on our videos on YouTube, we put the funny ones up as well.
Well, I can tell you the most frustrating thing that I had working for you was the fact that any time Alison would do something silly, the cameras were never rolling on her.
No, so but whenever my staff did, the cameras were always rolling on them.
Absolutely right. And Paul's got the final question for you.
If you could investigate any location, which would it be?
In the world.
In the world.
World. Actually, I'd like to go to Waverley. It is Waverley, isn't it?
Yeah, Waverley Hills, yeah.
Waverley Hills, yeah. I'd love to go up there. Absolutely would love to. That place has always intrigued me.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like a number one for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, it's just so huge.
It's my number two.
What's your number one, Paul?
Chernobyl.
Chernobyl?
Now, there's an interesting one.
There's like whole towns and cities out towards there, isn't there? Yeah.
And you would be the first to do it.
Oh, maybe not. I reckon someone would have done it. I reckon I've seen someone do it.
There's like some 3RT-headed investigation team out there.
They were going to do it live over the internet, but they never did. But I think they did investigate it. I can't remember the name of the place, but if I find it, I'll put a little link somewhere.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? A lot of deaths, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of EM fields. Well, maybe not EM fields, but energy fields.
Yeah, EM meters probably would give false things.
The Geiger counts would be going crazy.
All right.
At least you'd be ready for it.
Yeah. Well, that's it for you today, Alison. Now, I'd like to bring you back on the show again in a couple months. I guess we talked a lot about your tours this time. Next time, I think we might talk a lot about investigations and things. I think, you know, a lot of people are going to want to hear about things that have happened in your 20, however many years it was, investigating. Certainly probably the most senior investigator I know of in Adelaide, and that's not meant to sound rude.
Thank you for that.
All right, but...
With the grey hair, go on. while
we're still talking about tours, you do most of the tours here in Adelaide or South Australia, but what about outside of Adelaide? Which place could you recommend to us to go outside of South Australia?
Look, every time I would choose Beechworth, Maydare Hills Asylum, Beechworth Ghost Tours.
Yep.
I just love that place. That's another place I'd love to... Well, I have done a little bit with Adrian, who's a guide there, a little bit of investigation work. And that is a place that really, really made me nervous to be in when there was just him and me. It's the one place when that tour guide said to me, shall we do EVP? I actually said the words, actually, I don't feel like it. Because it's like you didn't want to attract its attention, whatever it was. That was the whole feeling in there. It was really weird. I did do EVP, by the way, but it was, it was that whole feeling of just not being safe when you're in that area.
That was the same place Ash felt uncomfortable?
This was the first time, but then Ash came back. I was used to it by then, but Ash got a feel for it on the second. It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely creepy. Yeah. But thank you very much for coming to, your desk and speaking to us over Skype. It's good that we can talk like this and, you know, call people up. And thank you very much for coming on the show.
It's been fun. It's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. And all the best in your future endeavours with the tours and investigating. And let us know, how can people contact you, Alison? How can people contact Haunted Horizons?
Well, they can go to our website, www.adelaidehauntedhorizons.com.au, or they can phone me on 04 077 15 866, or email me, it's a long one, mind you, on alison@adelaidehauntedhorizons.com.au.
Excellent, and bookings are essential on the tours.
Yeah, just in case they're full, so don't just go and pay.
Yeah, don't just go rocking up at Tailham Town on a Saturday evening and hoping for the best.
So we do get full.
All right, once again, thank you, and yeah.
Thank you.
Excellent. Everyone go, and by the way, people, go to her Facebook page, which, well, just look up Adelaide's Haunted Horizons on Facebook and you'll find her there, or we'll post up a link on our Facebook page to there along with this podcast. Goodbye.
See you later.
Do I say goodbye?
Yes, you can.
You can.
Goodbye.